From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 12th, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brewers are home this weekend, but they hit the road for all of next week. Today is Friday, and it's also National Limerick Day. An example, there once was a man from Nantucket. I'll stop right there. We don't want to give Kyle a heart attack. A German court said that a landlord sunbathing naked in the courtyard of his building was not reason enough for his tenants to arbitrarily reduce their own rent. The court said the usability of the rented property was not impaired by the plaintiff sunning himself naked in the courtyard. But I bet kids still skip that building on Halloween. Belgium just crushed 2,500 cans of Miller High Life because they object to Miller's slogan, the champagne of beer. They're afraid customers will be confused and buy Miller instead of champagne. I personally think Miller should take that as a compliment, and the Dutch people should take it as a personal insult that the champagne board thinks they can't tell the difference between beer and champagne. Speaking of the Dutch, they have an annual competition to find the best seagull imitator. Seagulls are nice to watch, but when you really boil it down, they're just flying rats. A 14-year-old boy was arrested for stealing a Nashville school bus and leading the police on a chase along Interstate I-40. He told the cops he did it because he was going to be late for school. He's going to be late a lot of days now. And finally, a 48-year-old female hiker was lost in the Australian wilderness for 5 days after her car got bogged down in the mud. She stayed in the car because it provided shelter and wine and lollipops. Well, the wine and lollipops were going to be gifts for her mom. If I bought my mom lollipops as a gift, she'd say, nice try, but go back and try it again. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Steve Giles, Joel Dreesing. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. There was wine, too. It wasn't just lollipops. So we got part of that story right, at least. Mixed week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 0.4%, closing at 12,285. The S&P down 0.3%, closing today. Down 12 points for the week, 41.24 on the S&P. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.1% for the week, closing at 33,301. For the year, the Dow up 1.1%, still in positive territory. The S&P much more positive, up 8% for the year, including dividends. And the NASDAQ, a pretty stellar 17.7%. Just a quick look at interest rates, largely stable for the week. The short-term 13-week Treasury up a little bit higher, closing above 5% at 5.03%. The 5-year and 10-year Treasury up just a little bit, closing right around that 3.45 mark on the 5-year and 3.46 on the 10. So just to give you an indication of where we've come on rates, maybe a little higher on the short side, a little lower on the long side from where we began the year, you know, pointing to the very things we've been talking about for a while now, the economy showing signs of a little bit of slowing here and there, inflation showing signs of continuing, albeit slowly, to come back under control. And Joel, we had maybe starting with the economic news at the top here this week, we had news on CPI, the first time we're back under 5% in a while here.
Yeah, Kyle, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is the broadest measure that we have for inflation. It's not what the Fed prefers to look at, but it's an indicator of inflation. And it's been down 10 months in a row to the lowest it's been in 2 years. And one thing that was interesting, so, and again, you said it was 4.9% for April, going back 12 months, and that's down from 9% back in June, which was a 40-year high. And one of the things that I really took as good news from this report was that the month-to-month inflation went up, and it was mostly up because of shelter costs, and yet the shelter costs went up only 0.4%. That's the lowest shelter costs have gone up in 15 months.
And I think a critical piece that's so often misunderstood in the inflation data is how we measure housing, right? That, you know, depending on whether you're renting or owning, your housing costs sometimes don't change at all for a long period of time if you're worried about a mortgage, or you know, every year if you're jumping from apartment to apartment and trying to figure out what that rent looks like. And so, you know, housing costs, such a huge piece of the typical spend of a household, but also maybe not always the best predictor of what actual inflation looks like. We got, you know, updated data on the various things in the basket, and I look at things that people were complaining about back in January, the cost of a dozen eggs, you know, north of $4.50. Well, yeah, now we're back around 3.25. And so, you know, I think if we can start to see some of that stabilization, even if it's not prices coming back down, but just stabilization, it makes consumers feel a little bit better about where prices are. And that's, I think, a healthy place to be, even if inflation's not back down to that 2% target. You know, I think the other piece of economic news this week, Joel, not just consumer prices, but also producer prices. Obviously, the cost to produce goods and services had been running hot, just like the cost to purchase those goods and services, and signs on the producer side as well that prices are coming back down.
That's right, and those costs, a lot of times historically, the consumer price index follows the producer price index in the direction that it's going, and the producer price index is you know, almost basically where the Fed wants inflation to be long term. It was 2.3% year to year, so that's the lowest it's been since the beginning of 2021. So that's a good sign. You know, again, we always caution, don't put too much into one month's report, but that's encouraging. And so it's another sign that inflation is going down, and it's, you know, getting closer to what the Fed wants. And remember, the Fed has been raising interest rates to slow down the economy to put inflation in perspective.
And I kind of wanted to start with the economic news today because I think it sets up the broader conversation that's out there, that continues to be out there on the debt ceiling. Still no resolution as we record this. I hope to be pleasantly surprised that at least we see some progress. But, you know, as it stands, there hasn't been much there. But, you know, that makes its way into how consumers, purchasing managers, you know, just individuals in general feel about the economy. And we got news on consumer sentiment this week that seems to point to some ongoing concerns about where things are headed.
Yeah, it's the report from the University of Michigan. It's a preliminary report. So, you know, they're looking at consumer sentiment for the month of May. We're only not even halfway through May yet. But the signs are that consumers are getting more pessimistic and that they're worried about the economy, even though we're seeing fewer signs in the economic indicators that there's a recession that's, you know, knocking on the door. We expect a recession sooner or later, but it doesn't look as impending right now as it did if you look at the economic data. But consumers aren't necessarily looking at the economic data. They're reading headlines or seeing news stories on TV or listening on the radio, and the concerns about the debt ceiling and coming up to that, and that's exacerbating consumer concerns about the economy. And that can be troublesome because if they get too concerned about the economy, they'll stop spending money, and that affects the economy.
And of course, the challenge here, Art, is that the debt ceiling conversation is so outside the control of investors, of really anybody but politicians right now, that we're counting on them to do the right thing. We're counting on them to pay the bills the government's already incurred, to honor the debt obligations that we've already said we were going to spend on. And so, you know, I know you get tons of questions from clients about how big of a deal is this? How far should we allow this to carry on? What are you hearing? What are you telling people? How do you kind of help clients understand, well, here's the real conversation that's going on, but more importantly, here's how it fits into what we do for you?
Yeah, the contrast between what people are talking about, what they're concerned about, and what they're actually doing is pretty stark. Consumers are still spending. The stock market, and when you look at these figures, it's ironic. If people are worried, why are they bidding up the things that are most aggressive? So I think the NASDAQ is finally in bull market territory again, and it's the more conservative Dow stocks that are sort of flat as a pancake for the year. So as you indicated, we don't control what these morons in Congress or in the White House do. And unfortunately, we can't control what the supposed news outlets are telling people. But people just don't get it. We have to pay our bills. It's clear. It's going to happen at some point in time. So all these fears, all these worries, all these concerns that people are expressing ultimately should abate if everybody does the right thing and raises the debt ceiling, and we can go about our business and people can continue to spend money and the stock market can continue to go higher.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Art, we live in a world where our elected politicians need to posture themselves. They need to rattle their sabers in an effort to look like they're working for their constituents or the base of their respective party, knowing full well that at the 11th hour, they'll come to some agreement behind closed doors to raise the debt ceiling. It happens every year. It did happen in 2011, although the 11th hour got pretty late, and we did see the repercussions of a downgrade on our U.S. credit quality, and that hurt us. And so hopefully they take some lessons from having gone through that before and don't wait as long as they did back then to come to some kind of resolution and hopefully get us – hopefully – they feel like they did what they needed to do as far as posturing is concerned and then get about to doing what Congress is supposed to do, and that's write laws.
You know, I was sifting through some old articles about the 2011 debt crisis and trying to comprehend, all right, what was the plan if we actually reached, we're calling it X date, right, this date in which we can't pay all of our bills anymore. Doesn't mean we can't pay any of them. It just means that some portion of them we won't be able to finance without continuing to incur a larger amount of deficit. And at the time, and it really was 6 years later when we found out what the plan really was, but at the time the plan was pay the bondholders first. Make sure that if they're holding government debt that they're counting on to be able to pay their bills, that that money gets paid first. And that might be at the expense of other government debt obligations, whether that's Social Security, whether that's paying contractors, who knows what that would be. But if ultimately the plan is allow the bondholders to see some satisfaction of their claims, whether it's immediate or carrying it until we do finally reach some kind of agreement, it at least gives me confidence that the safer things, the things we've been counting on to kind of hold us over when the volatile times come, because they do come, and this debt ceiling conversation is part of what adds to that volatility, it at least gives me confidence that we're still on the right track in terms of thinking about what safety is.
You know, if there was no agreement to be reached, I think the markets would be suggesting that all hope was lost and already trading down. So far, the markets don't seem to give us any indication that they're worried about a resolution being made.
And then the reminder, and I got an email this afternoon as I was going through all my junk, and normally I just delete the stuff that I know isn't important, but the headline or, you know, maybe one of the bylines caught me. Where will the Dow be in 2027? Well, that's not a question anybody's asking right now. We're very much talking about what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And Steve, this is something that you are so good at reminding clients to focus on is, yeah, in the next month, 3 months, 6 months, a lot can happen that can make us really nervous about investing. But if the focus is where's the Dow going to be 5 years from now?
It's going to be higher.
It's probably going to be higher. 90-95% of the time in five-year periods, stocks go up. And it's not a law of physics that they have to, but it allows us to focus on where we think things will be and why we think they'll be there. And what, Steve, does it take to get that long-term focus?
So Warren Buffett was once asked, and I know Bob has told this story in the past on the podcast, but this might be a good time to revisit it. Years ago, being interviewed by a bunch of reporters, Warren Buffett, obviously probably one of the more famous and well-known investors out there, was asked the question of what the market would do in the year ahead. And all these investors were just waiting with bated breath what, you know, the Oracle of Omaha would have to say. And, you know, Warren thought about it for a minute, and he finally said, well, I can tell you with 100% certainty that next year the market will fluctuate. And he was right. He was 100% right. And he has a point there. Nobody knows what's going to happen. You just want to make sure that you build yourself a portfolio so that no matter what happens, you're still going to look smart, whether it's a debt ceiling debate or if it's somebody flying an airplane into a building. You just want to make sure that no matter what happens, you still look like you made the right decision.
Well, and I think the point that I come back to is reacting to that volatility causes us to make bad decisions. We're acting with incomplete information, often wrong information, about what the long-term impact of a very near-term problem will be. And as a result, you get clients that or just investors in general that want to do things that are contrary to maybe what's in their best interests. I know we get questions all the time, and Art, you in kind of your show notes today, we're talking about, here's a question I keep getting. What do I do if I've got debt on my books right now? Should I be paying down my mortgage knowing that maybe now's a good time to take some money out because things might get volatile for a little while? I know you mentioned specifically two different clients looking at their mortgage and going, well, what should I do here? How do you help them navigate that question? And more importantly, you know, I guess what's the right answer? And is it the same for everybody?
Right, and it's going to vary, and it's going to vary with the times. So about a year ago, one of my clients had an inheritance and had a mortgage. I mean, interest rates were down to nothing, and they had a mortgage at about 3.6%. And they asked what they should do with the inheritance. I said, pay off the mortgage. And they did. They put down $50,000 on a $100,000+ mortgage, and so they still have a mortgage. I say, how come you didn't pay it all off? Well, we're getting 4.whatever% now at the bank, and that was a good decision. It was after-tax money. They could have paid it off, but they're making more money on the money they would have used to pay down the mortgage, so I thought that was a good decision. Earlier today, I got a call from a client, clearly concerned, didn't express it quite that way, but was clearly concerned about the economy, about the debt ceiling crisis. And so they ask, should we take money out of our IRA to pay off our mortgage? Okay, and so the answer is different, because I said, you're gonna get creamed in taxes. I mean, if you take it out of your IRA, the tax burden is gonna be ridiculous. You're gonna shoot yourself through higher tax brackets. You're gonna have nothing left. And furthermore, you've averaged 6% per year over the past 15, 20 years. Why would you do that? Which was all they needed to hear. So because with all the chatter out there, people don't know who to believe, who to trust, where to get good answers to what could be perceived to be complicated questions. So because we can give those answers, I hope I gave the right answer, people will make better decisions despite word on the street, oh no, we got a debt ceiling crisis, or we got this, that, or the other. So as you indicated, it's very important to make good decisions. There are long-term decisions. As Steve just mentioned, over long periods of time, we know stocks are going to go higher. We don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know what's going to happen in a month, a week, a day. But over time, as the economy grows, assuming that continues to happen, we're going to make money, in stocks. But we don't want to put everything in stocks because you don't want to be at risk for everything if things go the wrong way over short periods of time.
Well, and I think part of the challenge in those questions right now is that the interest rate environment has changed so much that it used to be an easy answer. Go ahead and take out that 6-year car loan at 0%. Go ahead and buy that big house and take out the 3.25% 30-year mortgage. Hey, they want to give you 40 years? Go ahead and take it. I'll borrow forever if you want me to pay that low of an interest rate, because it's a very different world.
And that, ironically, Kyle, is what the U.S. did, borrowing money at such low rates, which is why we need to raise the debt ceiling.
And, of course, now, with interest rates on mortgages at twice what they were just maybe 18 months ago, okay, the conversation is very different. And so it makes sense that we should be regularly asking those questions. We should be regularly asking, what's the right way from where's our outlook now? What are the opportunity sets now? What should we be doing different than we did before? And the good news is, even if your mortgage from 2 years ago is 3.5%, 4%, you can still do better than that on safe money right now, on money markets, on CDs, on short-term treasuries. I'd rather carry that mortgage for a little while longer and take 5% than pay off the 4%. And so I think the math is never as simple as, well, the world's going to fall apart tomorrow. The real math is, well, what are your alternatives? And what's the cost of picking those? And so, I think plenty, despite the calm week, plenty for us to keep our eye on. The good news this week was there weren't really any new problems. We're still dealing with the same old. The bad news, because it's always good and bad. The bad news is we didn't maybe get much resolution on the stuff we're hoping for resolution on. And so as we get further into this month and as we maybe reach what could be a June 1st kind of X date for this debt ceiling conversation, I think plenty to watch, plenty to be concerned about, plenty to maybe write your Congress, your representative about, just to make sure that they understand how you feel. But you know, I think I'm encouraged by the fact that markets have held up as well as they have, given all the uncertainty that's out there. With that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.